Outside, there were shouts of fire in the yard, screams, running footsteps, the whinny of frightened horses, and the frantic barking of the castle dogs. The howling was gone, she realized, as she listened to the cacophony. The direwolves had fallen silent. Catelyn said a silent prayer of thanks to the seven faces of God as she went to the window. Across the bailey, long tongues of fire shot from the windows of the library. She watched the smoke rise into the sky and thought sadly of all the books the Starks had gathered over the centuries. Then she closed the shutters. When she turned away from the window, the man was in the room with her.
"You weren't supposed to be here," he muttered sourly. "No one was supposed to be here."
He was a small, dirty man, in filthy brown clothing, and he stank of horses. Catelyn knew all the men who worked in their stables, and he was none of them. He was gaunt, with limp blond hair and pale eyes, deep sunk in a bony face, and there was a dagger in his hand. Catelyn looked at the knife, then at Bran.
"No,"
she said, the word stuck in her throat, the merest whisper. He must have heard her.
"It's a mercy," he said. "He's dead already."
"No," Catelyn said, louder now she had found her voice again. "No, you can't." She spun back toward the window to scream for help, but the man moved faster than she would have believed. One hand clamped down over her mouth and yanked back her head. The other brought the dagger up to her windpipe. The stench of him was overwhelming. She reached up with both hands and grabbed the blade with all her strength, pulling it away from her throat. She heard him cursing into her ear. Her fingers were slippery with blood, but she would not let go of the dagger. The hand over her mouth clenched more tightly, shutting off her air. Catelyn twisted her head to the side and managed to get a piece of his flesh between her teeth. She bit down hard into his palm. The man grunted in pain. She ground her teeth together and tore at him, and all of a sudden he let go. The taste of his blood filled her mouth. She sucked in air and screamed, and he grabbed her hair and pulled her away from him, and she stumbled and went down, and then he was standing over her, breathing hard, shaking. The dagger was still clutched tightly in his right hand, slick with blood.
"You weren't supposed to be here," he repeated stupidly.
Catelyn saw the shadow slip through the open door behind him. There was a low rumble, less than a snarl, the merest whisper of a threat. But he must have heard something, because he started to turn, just as the wolf made its leap. They went down together, half sprawled over Catelyn where she'd fallen. The wolf had him under the jaw. The man's shriek lasted less than a second before the beast wrenched back its head, taking out half his throat. His blood felt like warm rain as it sprayed across her face. The wolf was looking at her. Its jaws were red and wet, and its eyes glowed golden in the dark room. It was Bran's wolf, she realized. Of course it was.
"Thank you,"
Catelyn whispered, her voice faint and tiny. She lifted her hand, trembling. The wolf padded closer, sniffed at her fingers, then licked at the blood with a wet, rough tongue. When it had cleaned all the blood off her hand, it turned away silently and jumped up on Bran's bed and lay down beside him. Catelyn began to laugh hysterically. That was the way they found them. When Rob and Maester Luan and Sir Roderick burst in with half the guards in Winterfell, when the laughter finally died in her throat, they wrapped her in warm blankets and led her back to the great keep, to her own chambers. Old Nan undressed her and helped her into a scalding hot bath and washed the blood off her with a soft cloth. Afterwards, Maester Luan arrived to dress her wounds. The cuts in her fingers were deep, almost to the bone, and her scalp was raw and bleeding where he'd pulled out a handful of hair. The maester told her The pain was just starting now, and gave her milk of the poppy to help her sleep. Finally, she closed her eyes. When she opened them again, they told her she had slept 4 days. Catelyn nodded and sat up in bed. It all seemed like a nightmare to her now. Everything since Bran's fall, a terrible dream of blood and grief. But she had the pain in her hands to remind her that it was real. She felt weak and light-headed, yet strangely resolute, as if a great weight had lifted from her. "Bring me some bread and honey," she told her servants, "and take word to Maester Lewin that my bandages want changing." They looked at her in surprise and ran to do her bidding. Catelyn remembered the way she had been before, and she was ashamed. She had let them all down, her children, her husband, her house. It would not happen again. She would show these northerners how strong a Tully of Riverrun could be. Rob arrived before her food. Roderick Cassell came with him, and her husband's ward, Theon Greyjoy, and lastly, Hallas Mollen, a muscular guardsman with a square brown beard. He was the new captain of the guard, Rob said. Her son was dressed in boiled leather and ringmail, she saw, and a sword hung at his waist. "Who was he?" Catelyn asked him. "No one knows his name," Hallas Mollen told her. "He was no man of Winterfell, my lady, but some says they seen him here and about the castle these past few weeks." "One of the king's men, then," she said, "or one of the Lannisters. He could have waited behind when the others left." "Maybe," Hal said. "With all these strangers filling up Winterfell of late, there's no way of saying who he belongs to." "He'd been hiding in your stable," Greyjoy said. "You could smell it on him." "And how could he go unnoticed?" she said sharply. Hallas Mollen looked abashed. "Between the horses Lord Eddard took south, and then we sent north to the Night's Watch, the stalls were half empty. It were no great trick to hide from the stable boys. Could be Hodar saw him. The talk is the boy's been acting queer. But simple as he is..." Hal shook his head. "We found where he'd been sleeping," Rob put in. "He had 90 silver stags in a leather bag buried beneath the straw. It's good to know my son's life was not so cheaply," Catelyn said bitterly. Hallas Mollen looked at her confused. "Begging your grace, m'lady, you saying he was out to kill your boy?" Greyjoy was doubtful. "Oh, that's madness." "He came for Bran," Catelyn said. "He kept muttering how I wasn't supposed to be there. He set the library fire thinking I would rush to put it out, taking any guards with me. If I hadn't been half mad with grief, it would have worked." "Why would anyone want to kill Bran?" Rob asked. "Gods, he's only a little boy. Helpless, sleeping." Catelyn gave her firstborn a challenging look. "If you are to rule in the North, you must think these things through, Rob. Answer your own question. Why would anyone want to kill a sleeping child?" Before he could answer, the servants returned with a plate of food fresh from the kitchen. There was much more than she'd asked for. Hot bread, butter and honey, and blackberry preserves, a rasher of bacon and a soft-boiled egg, a wedge of cheese, a pot of mint tea, and with it came Maester Lewin. "How is my son, Maester?" Catelyn looked at all the food and found she had no appetite. Maester Lewin lowered his eyes. "Unchanged, my lady." It was the reply she had expected. No more, and no less. Her hands throbbed with pain, as if the blade were still in her, cutting deep. She sent the servants away and looked back to Rob. "Do you have the answer yet?" "Someone is afraid Bran might wake up," Rob said. "Afraid of what he might say or do. Afraid of something he knows." Catelyn was proud of him. "Very good." She turned to the new captain of the guard. "We must keep Bran safe. If there was one killer, there could be others." "How many guards do you want, m'lady?" he asked. So long as Lord Eddard is away, my son is the master of Winterfell, she told him. Rob stood a little taller. Put one man in the sick room, night and day, one outside the door, two at the bottom of the stairs. No one sees Bran without my warrant or my mother's. As you say, my lord. Do it now, Catelyn suggested. And let his wolf stay in the room with him, Rob added. Yes, Catelyn said, and then again, yes. Halas Mollan bowed and left the room. Lady Stark, Sir Roderick said when the guardsman had gone, did you chance to notice the dagger the killer used? The circumstances did not allow me to examine it closely, but I can vouch for its edge, Catelyn replied with a dry smile. Why do you ask? We found the knife still in the villain's grasp. It seems to me that it was altogether too fine a weapon for such a man. So I looked at it long and hard. The blade is Valyrian steel, the hilt dragonbone. A weapon like that has no business being in the hands of such as him. Someone gave it to him. Catelyn nodded, thoughtful. Rob, close the door. He looked at her strangely, but did as she told him. What I am about to tell you must not leave this room, she told him. I want your oaths on that. If ever a part of what I suspect is true, Ned and my girls have ridden into deadly danger, and a word in the wrong ears could mean their lives. Lord Eddard is a second father to me, said Theon Greyjoy. I do so swear. You have my oath, Maester Lewin said. And mine, milady, echoed Sir Roderick. She looked at her son. And you, Rob? He nodded his consent. My sister Lysa believes the Lannisters murdered her husband, Lord Aeron, the Hand of the King, Catelyn told him. It comes to me that Jaime Lannister did not join the hunt the day Bran fell. He remained here in the castle. The room was deathly quiet. I do not think Bran fell from that tower, she said into the stillness. I think he was thrown. The shock was plain on their faces. My lady, this is a monstrous suggestion, said Roderick Cassell. Even the Kingslayer would flinch at the murder of an innocent child. Oh, would he? Theon Greyjoy asked. I wonder. There is no limit to Lannister pride or Lannister ambition, Catelyn said. The boy has always been sure-handed in the past, Maester Lewin said thoughtfully. He knew every stone in Winterfell. Gods, Rob swore, his young face dark with anger. If this is true, he will pay for it. He drew his sword and waved it in the air. I'll kill him myself. Sir Roderick bristled at him. Put that away. The Lannisters are 100 leagues away. Never draw your sword unless you mean to use it. How many times must I tell you, foolish boy? Abashed, Rob sheathed his sword, suddenly a child again. Catelyn said to Sir Roderick, I see my son is wearing steel now. The old master-at-arms said, Well, I thought it was time. Rob was looking at her anxiously. Past time, she said. Winterfell may have need of all its swords soon, and they had best not be made of wood. Theon Greyjoy put a hand on the hilt of his blade and said, My lady, if it comes to that, my house owes yours a great debt. Maester Lewin pulled at his chain collar where it chafed against his neck. All we have is conjecture. This is the Queen's beloved brother we mean to accuse. She will not take it kindly. We must have proof, or forever keep silent. Your proof is in the dagger, Sir Roderick said. A fine blade like that will not have gone unnoticed. There was only one place to find the truth of it, Catelyn realized. Someone must go to the King's Landing. I'll go, Rob said. No, she told him, your place is here. There must always be a Stark in Winterfell. She looked at Sir Roderick, with his great white whiskers, at Maester Lewin, in his grey robes, at young Greyjoy, lean and dark and impetuous. Who to send? Who would be believed? Then she knew. Catelyn struggled to push back the blankets, her bandaged fingers as stiff and unyielding as stone. She climbed out of bed. I must go myself.
My lady, said Maester Lewin, is that wise? Surely the Lannisters would greet your arrival with suspicion.
What about Bran? Rob asked. The poor boy looked utterly confused now.
You can't mean to leave him.
I've done everything I can for Bran, she said, laying a wounded hand on his arm. His life is in the hands of the gods and Maester Lewin. As you reminded me yourself, Rob, I have other children to think of now. You will need a strong escort, my lady, Theon said. I'll send Hal with a squad of guardsmen, Rob said. No, Catelyn said. A large party attracts unwelcome attention. I would not have the Lannisters know I'm coming. Sir Roderick protested.
My lady, let me accompany you at least. The King's Road can be perilous for a woman alone.
I will not be taking the King's Road, Catelyn replied. She thought for a moment, then nodded her consent. Two riders can move as fast as one, and a good deal faster than a long column burdened by wagons and wheelhouses. I will welcome your company, Sir Roderick. We will follow the White Knife down to the sea, hire a ship at White Harbour. Strong horses and brisk winds should bring us to King's Landing, well ahead of Ned and the Lannisters.
And then, she thought, we shall see what we shall see.
Sansa. Eddard Stark had left before dawn, Septa Mordain informed Sansa, as they broke their fast.
The king sent for him, another hunt, I do believe. There are still wild aurochs in these lands, I'm told.
I've never seen an aurochs, Sansa said, feeding a piece of bacon to Lady under the table. The direwolf took it from her hand, as delicate as a queen.
Septa Mordain sniffed in disapproval.
A noble lady does not feed dogs at her table, she said, breaking off another piece of comb and letting the honey drip down onto her bread.
She's not a dog, she's a direwolf, Sansa pointed out, as Lady licked her fingers with a rough tongue.
Anyway, Father said we could keep them with us if we want.
The scepter was not appeased.
You're a good girl, Sansa, but I do vow when it comes to that creature, you're as willful as your sister Arya.
She scowled.
And where is Arya this morning?
She wasn't hungry, Sansa said, knowing full well that her sister had probably stolen down to the kitchen hours ago and wheedled a breakfast out of some cook's boy.
Do remind her to dress nicely today. The grey velvet, perhaps. We are all invited to ride with the Queen and Princess Myrcella in the royal wheelhouse, and we must look our best.
Sansa already looked her best. She had brushed out her long auburn hair until it shone, and picked the nicest blue silks. She had been looking forward to today for more than a week. It was a great honour to ride with the Queen, and besides, Prince Joffrey might be there, her betrothed. Just thinking it made her feel a strange fluttering inside, even though they were not to marry for years and years. Sansa did not really know Geoffrey yet, but she was already in love with him. He was all she ever dreamed her prince should be, tall and handsome and strong, with hair like gold. She treasured every chance to spend time with him, few as they were. The only thing that scared her about today was Arya. Arya had a way of ruining everything. You never knew what she would do.
I'll tell her, Sansa said uncertainly, but she'll dress the way she always does.
She hoped it wouldn't be too embarrassing. May I be excused?
You may.
Septa Mordain helped herself to more bread and honey, and Sansa slid from the bench. Lady followed at her heels as she ran from the inn's common room. Outside, she stood for a moment amidst the shouts and curses and the creak of wooden wheels as the men broke down the tents and pavilions and loaded the wagons for another day's march. The inn was a sprawling three-story structure of pale stone, the biggest that Sansa had ever seen,
but even so it had accommodations for less than a third of the king's party, which had swollen to more than 400 with the addition of her father's household and the free riders who had joined them on the road. She found Arya on the banks of the Trident, trying to hold Nymeria still while she brushed dry mud from her fur. The dire wolf was not enjoying the process. Arya was wearing the same riding leathers she had worn yesterday and the day before. "You'd better put on something pretty," Sansa told her. "Septa Mordain said so. We're travelling in the Queen's wheelhouse with Princess Myrcella today." "I'm not," Arya said, trying to brush a tangle out of Nymeria's matted grey fur. "Micah and I are going to ride upstream and look for rubies at the fort." "Rubies?" Sansa said, lost. "What rubies?" Arya gave her a look, like she was so stupid. "Rhaegar's rubies! This is where King Robert killed him and won the crown." Sansa regarded her scrawny little sister in disbelief. "You can't look for rubies. The princess is expecting us. The queen invited us both." "I don't care," Arya said. "The wheelhouse doesn't even have windows. You can't see a thing." "Well, what could you want to see?" Sansa said, annoyed. She had been thrilled by the invitation, and her stupid sister was going to ruin everything, just as she feared. It's all just fields and farms and holdfasts." "It is not," Arya said stubbornly. "If you came with us sometimes, you'd see." "I hate riding," Sansa said fervently. "All it does is get you soiled and dusty and sore." Arya shrugged. "Hold still," she snapped at Nymeria. "I'm not hurting you." Then to Sansa she said, "When we were crossing the Neck, I counted 36 flowers I never saw before, and Micah showed me a lizard line." Sansa shuddered. They had been 12 days crossing the Neck, rumbling down a crooked causeway through an endless black bog, and she had hated every moment of it. The air had been damp and clammy, the causeway so narrow they could not even make proper camp at night. They had to stop right on the King's Road. Dense thickets of half-drowned trees pressed close around them, branches dripping with curtains of pale fungus. Huge flowers bloomed in the mud and floated on pools of stagnant water. But if you were stupid enough to leave the causeway to pluck them, there were quicksands waiting to suck you down, and snakes watching from the trees, and lizard lions floating half-submerged in the water, like black lugs with eyes and teeth. None of which stopped Arya, of course. One day she came back grinning her horsey grin, her hair all tangled and her clothes covered in mud, clutching a raggedy bunch of purple and green flowers for father. Sansa kept hoping he would tell Arya to behave herself and act like the high-born lady she was supposed to be. But he never did. He only hugged her and thanked her for the flowers. That just made her worse. Then it turned out the purple flowers were called poison kisses, and Arya got a rash on her arms. Sansa would have thought that might have taught her a lesson, but Arya laughed about it, and the next day she rubbed mud all over her arms just like some ignorant bug woman, just because her friend, Micah, told her it would stop the itching. She had bruises on her arms and shoulders too, dark purple welts and faded green and yellow splotches. Sansa had seen them when her sister undressed for sleep. How she had gotten those, only the Seven Guards knew. Arya was still going on, brushing out Nymeria's tangles and chattering about things she'd seen on the trek south. "Last week we found this haunted watchtower, and the day before we chased a herd of wild horses. You should have seen them run when they caught a scent of Nymeria." The wolf wriggled in her grasp, and Arya scolded her. "Stop that! I have to do the other side. You're all muddy." "You're not supposed to leave the column," Sansa reminded her. "Father said so." Arya shrugged. "I didn't go far. Anyway, Nymeria was with me the whole time. I don't always go off either. Sometimes it's fun just to ride along with the wagons and talk to people." Sansa knew all about the sorts of people Arya liked to talk to. Squires and grooms and serving girls, old men and naked children, rough-spoken free riders of uncertain birth. Arya would make friends with anybody. This Micah was the worst, a butcher's boy, 13 and wild. He slept in the meat wagon and smelled of the slaughtering block. Just the sight of him was enough to make Sansa feel sick. But Arya seemed to prefer his company to hers. Sansa was running out of patience now. "You have to come with me," she told her sister firmly. "You can't refuse the queen. Septa Mordain will expect you." Arya ignored her. She gave a hard yank with a brush. Nymeria growled and spun away, affronted. "Come back here!"